People have told stories of the strange and supernatural for centuries. Tales of the restless dead return to haunt the living. Whispers of damned souls doing the devil's bidding on earth. Rumors of inhuman things that still hunt the old forests, untouched by the glare of modern life. There may be more to these stories than you could ever imagine. Join us tonight as we delve into the deeper truth inside these mysteries.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Bizarre Tales. And it's been a bit, hasn't it, Lee? We've had a few weeks off.
Well, yes. But obviously we've put shows out in between, haven't we?
Well, you have. No. I've been off holiday with the wife and kids. Mm. Although, what would the Americans call that, a vacation, don't they?
Yes. That's what it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, just...
Well, it's summertime, isn't it? It's the end of the summertime, that's what it is, so...
Yeah, I had a few days off, and making recording together a little bit more difficult. So we've had a review, which I showed you earlier in the week. Thought it was, they're not going to be listening anymore, are they?
No.
I doubt, we've said this before to you guys. I mean, by all means, if you want to leave us a lower review... this was a one-star review, basically saying that obviously the shows aren't edited enough and that's why they don't like it. Well, if you want to pay for an editor, then be my guest. We'll have a professional editor come in and do it. I'll be more than happy if someone wants to pay for these shows to be edited. But other than that, it's me and Lee that edits them. So
that's what amazes me with stuff like that. It's like, why leave that in a review?
Yeah.
You know, why not just email us? And then I would have said to him, look, mate, I've done 65 hours this week. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It takes like 3 or 4 hours to edit a show. I've got kids at the weekend. When do you want me to do that shit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not that we don't want to do it.
We don't have time.
It's just that we just don't get fucking chance. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think people do have this attitude that because we're doing a podcast and because, you know, we have, you know, from some quality of podcasts, you know, you listen to some of them, they are... pretty bad quality. Ours is, I don't think, a bad quality. I think a lot of people just assume that the good quality podcasts tend to be making more money, and this is what we do full time, but it's not. You know, both me and Lee work 60 hours a week.
I don't think I've been in the house before 9 o'clock this week.
No, I don't think I have.
Friday, so, I mean, I just, it's like, just, I'd like I said before, if you just can email that shit and I can explain to you, you know, this is why. If you want to pay for an edit, or if he wants to do the fucking editing, brilliant, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But, you know, it doesn't always get done. Obviously, the video ones are slightly different because they're videos, so it's just like...
Yeah, that's just... They obviously don't...
Yeah, and I'm reading emails, and when people write emails, they don't put commas in, they don't put full stops in, you know what I mean? I never really understand that, because when I write an email, I always put them in, just to make it readable for the person. But obviously, when people are just typing fast, they don't always think about, I'll put a break in a sentence here, so... You know, that's that. But they're like them case files that I'm doing are about, 4 or 5 minutes long, something like that. They're not going to be massively, if it was an hour long, I probably would edit them a bit more. But, but no, they're just spoken. And because of the video as well.
Yeah, the sound quality is not great.
It don't really matter so much about taking bits out and all that. Because if you're watching the video, you get the thing.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched them, go on our YouTube and look at them there. They are on our Facebook page and that. But, all right. Despite the review, I'm just surprised that we've all made it through another week. It's getting tough out there.
Yeah, it is.
So, mostly, I mean, everyone else that listens, we've got to appreciate them.
Hmm.
I don't leave stupid reviews without emailing us first.
Yeah.
Again, that was from New Zealand, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. What can you say?
But, sour grapes out the way.
No, but if he's listening, then hopefully he understands.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's what we want. You know, we want him to go listen to this episode and go, oh, shit, yeah, maybe that was a bit harsh.
Yeah, I'd like him to work 65 hours a week, Monday to Friday, then have his children at the weekend, and then him do the editing.
And then find time to actually record a show.
And get dumped twice in one day.
Oh, yeah, he did have a bad week.
That did happen, so...
Yeah, so Lee is now free and single again.
I'm surprised I'm still here. I'm surprised anybody's still here. Honestly, I know the suicide rate's through the roof and that, but we must have people that are feeling like just like shit at the minute. Like, you know,
And there's a lot of people out there.
So I don't want to get overly, like, pissed off with that review or anything like that. I mean, it don't really piss me off. It's more annoyance than that. But obviously, everything contributes to making you feel like shit. So thanks for that. But again, you know, shit happens. I mean, I've been talking to people this week that have been, you know, depressed. People are depressed. The world's crazy. So, I mean, if anyone wants to speak to us, you know, I say we work 60 hours a week, but obviously Facebook's 24 hours, 7 days a week. If you message on Facebook, we will get back to you. And I don't think there's anybody that's ever messaged us that never got a message back.
No, I don't think that. Everyone's got, even that guy who was sending you dick pics got messages.
He got a message back, yeah. Eventually I had to block him.
Yeah. Don't do that, guys.
Yeah. I had a look first, But don't do that. But hey, look, if you need to reach out, we're here. Everyone should know that. And if you've got we've got a WhatsApp group set up, and that is in the description of the podcast now. So if you want to message us there, obviously everyone can see the message. But if you want to message privately, you could do that as well. But if you want to send us a story or you've run into something, then we've got a WhatsApp group there. So just, you know, get in touch. There's plenty of ways to do it. Email supernaturalpod@gmail.com.
Absolutely.
I've just got two things to say. I know we're rambling on here, but I've got two things to say before we start that show. First of all, I want to thank Stephanie for coming on last week. I did actually thank her at the end of the show, but I forgot to put it in my editing. I didn't get a chance to do that properly, so I did actually record a piece saying thank you very much, Stephanie, for coming on the show and all that, and then I forgot to put it on. It just went straight from the interview straight into the end outro. So that's my bad. Obviously, I've spoke to Stephanie, so she's aware of that. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm, you know, telling her now. But I'm telling her now, just say thank you very much for coming on the show, sharing your story. Again, you know, if you're out there and you're thinking about coming on the show or coming on a show to share your story,
do it.
Then do it. You know what I mean?
You reach out.
If you don't feel comfortable enough with coming on the show yourself, you can always send us your story by text message, email, whatever. You know, there are other ways to do it. You can come and speak to us. Talk about it, and then we don't have to record it even. But if you want to record it, that's a bonus.
Well, the advantage now with the WhatsApp group is, I don't know if any of you listened to the Buckinghamshire episode that my cousin joined us on. Those were all sent via WhatsApp. All those sound clips were sent via WhatsApp.
Like pre-record things. Yeah. So
you can always do that if you're not confident coming on the show.
And then what was the other thing? So that was...
And we do edit because I edited the crap out of that.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I do. Right? The shows don't just go out like, you know...
they just go out willy-nilly.
The poppycock ones pretty much do. There's not much editing to them. There's no editing to them. No, they just go out as they are. These ones, we would normally edit stuff out. And then the other thing was Jerry Hillbilly Horror Stories. So
yes,
I just say hello to anybody that's come across from Hillbilly Horror Stories. So if you have come across from Hillbilly Horror Stories, then please, if you can, it's important for Hillbilly Horror Stories and me to know. So
yes, definitely.
If you can just let me
know, especially if you've heard that promo.
If you've heard the promo and you've come across from that, then you know. Please, if you can let me know, that would be fantastic, because we are trying to get the data on that. And hopefully you enjoy the show. So thank you very much for coming, and enjoy the show. Here is our Haunted Counties series. We are up to Cornwall.
Cornwall? Yeah, it is Cornwall.
Do you say Cornwall or Cornwall?
I've got a London accent. Cornwall.
Cornwall.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how to say it now.
I just know they don't class themselves as English.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. Well, we shall get into it. So the first one we have is called the Crumplehorn Inn. Now this is in Loo. Okay, if you want a postcode, it's PL13. So, although only an inn since 1972, the group of buildings comprising the complex now known as the Crumplehorn Inn are far older and have had ample opportunities to acquire a few otherworldly residents. In the bar, for example, witnesses speak of an indistinct something glimpsed out the corner of their eye, but which has apparently disappeared when they turn to look at it. Late one Sunday night, a barmaid had turned the lights off at the end of her shift and was walking past the toilet
when suddenly the door creaked wide open. She, thinking someone had been locked in, she shouted an apology, only to be left gazing in disbelief as the door promptly closed again. Confused, she went to investigate, but found out that the toilet was empty. The inn's former owner, Andrew Taylor, has encountered the wraiths of the haunt of the inn on several occasions. His living quarters were situated in the 16th century mill house, and one morning he woke to see someone standing in front of the mirror, holding a cigarette and clasping their hands to their forehead, as though they had a really bad headache. Thinking it must be his wife Anne, he asked if she was all right, but then saw that Anne was still in bed beside him, and when he looked backwards towards the mirror, the figure had gone. Sometimes, laying in bed late at night, they would hear the voices of a man and woman whispering in the loft above them. On one occasion, they even heard what sounded like a door latching, although there is no door to the loft. His wife Anne sadly died in 1994 and was reported very psychic and formed the impression that the male voice belonged to a World War I soldier who had deserted and was hiding in the loft in the old mill. The female voice was that of his lady. Eventually, he was captured and sent back to the front, where he was killed in the trenches, but it seems that every so often, the revenants of the two lovers return to the place where they shared their last moments together.
It's a bit creepy, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I like how he woke up and thought a ghost was his wife.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said. We were talking about it. People try to rationalise it.
Yeah, yeah.
We were saying that a few weeks ago. The next one is the Dolphin Inn in Penzance. The Dolphin Inn has echoed to the salty banter of the seafaring fraternity for going on 500 years. It is said that the great Elizabethan sailor Sir John Hawkins used it as a base to recruit and organise the Cornish fleet that fought the Spanish Armada in the 16th century. Later traditions maintain the plumes from the first tobacco to be smoked in England waft amongst the rafters. Later still, the psychopathic Judge Jeffreys is reputed to have turned the Dolphin's dining room into a courtroom and its cellar into a jail. When he came west to mete out the savage retribution against those who had supported the Duke of Monmouth's ill-fated attempt to wrest the throne of England from James II in 1685. The inn's proximity to the ocean led to frequent flooding over the years. A problem that was solved in the mid-19th century when the massive grey sea walls that tower above it were built. It was about this time when the proprietor, William Pascoe, was fined for refusing to billet soldiers at the Dolphin. His successor, Mr. Patch, was not so choosy about his clientele, and in 1868 found himself hauled up before the authorities for harbouring lewd and loose women on the premises. By the early 20th century, the hostelry had settled in to a respectable old age and was a favoured stopover for gentry awaiting the ships that would depart from the harbour opposite. The ghosts at the Dolphin, so we do have ghost stories from it. At least three ghosts are known to reside within the walls of the Dolphin's history-steeped walls. The most persistent of that is of an old sea captain who wears a tri-cornered hat, the old-fashioned, I'd say like Johnny Depp, Pirates of the Caribbean, that.
Pirate hat.
Yeah. Lace ruffles, a striking jacket, resplendent with shiny brass buttons. Successive landlords have come to know him as George, and have been happy to allow him to continue his nefarious wanderings until he tires of plodding about upstairs in the rooms and the corridors in the dead of night. Another ghost is that of a Victorian woman in a Victorian dress, who flits across the main bar in front of startled onlookers. And it is said that on a Sunday morning in October 2000, a member of staff was sitting at the bar awaiting the start of a busy lunchtime session, when the ghost suddenly materialized from the wall beside him and drifted across to the opposite wall, where she melted into the stonework. The final phantom is that of a fair-haired young man. Over the years, several landlords and landladies have awoken to find him standing by or even sitting on the bottom of their beds. No one has ever discovered his identity, for he has an annoying habit of simply drifting away the moment anyone speaks to him. These all seem to be pubs.
Yeah, I think.
But I mean, Cornwall is.
Yeah, the place of most history, though, aren't it? Inns, pubs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Castles.
Yeah. But the next one is also a pub. It's the Jamaica Inn.
Oh, yeah.
In Launcetown. Reportedly, the most haunted located inn in Cornwall. The oldest parts of the Jamaica pub date back to the 18th century. And originally, it catered for travellers on the Turnpike Road from Bodmin to Launceston. The name Jamaica Inn came from a local Trelawney family, important landowners, in the area. Two of those members served as governors of Jamaica in the 18th century. The surrounding countryside was, and still is, wild, rugged, and remote. And the inn gave shelter and sustenance to many travellers who's found it weary on the roads around the Bodmin Moor. The Jamaica Inn wind-lashed walls also provide a haven for less, let's say, savoury characters. And for many years, it was a notorious haunt for smugglers. The publication in 1936 of Delphine du Maurier's classic novel Jamaica Inn made the place famous throughout the world and led to the expansion into the sprawling tourist complex that greets visitors today. Several ghosts are said to wander within and around the Jamaica Inn's old interior. Phantom footsteps have been heard plodding along corridors in the dead of night. The sound of horses' hooves sometimes clatters over the outside courtyard in the early hours, and witnesses awoken by the phantom hoofbeats part the curtains to investigate, to see nothing. The murmur of agitated conversation in some foreign tongue or foreign dialect has also been heard in the darker corners of otherwise empty rooms. Every so often, the inn's best known and oldest ghost transcends the centuries to astonish and bemuse those who chance upon him. In life, he is reputed to have been a wayfarer who one evening long ago was sipping ale at the bar when a man peered around the corner and called for him to come outside. Setting down his half-filled tankard, the wayfarer went out into the night and was never seen alive again. The next morning, his lifeless corpse was found on Bodmin Moor. His identity and that of the assassin remains a mystery to this day, but the ghost has appeared many times and has a particular attraction to the wall in front of the inn. Here, he has often been seen just sitting, silent and motionless. He does not respond to any greetings and appears oblivious to those who pass him by. And after a few moments of gazing nonchalantly into space, slowly dissolves into nothingness.
Mm.
Sounds like a time lapse, that, doesn't it?
Yeah. I bet there's loads of bodies on Bodmin Moor, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Loads not found. And that thing about the horse-drawn carriage, you know, I've heard people talk about that.
Mm.
They're just in bed and then they hear this. It sounds like a horse and cart pull up outside, which is pretty distinctive.
Yeah.
And even the horse's breath and all the rest of it, and then they look out and it's just nothing there.
Mm.
So it's some sort of residual sound, isn't it? Like a stone tape thing. But I mean, can you imagine just laid there, then you hear that? Because you didn't not hear it, did you?
No, you know what it sounds like. Yeah, you definitely know what it sounds like.
And the cigarette smoke, you know, you spoke about that in the last one. You know, walk in the pub, and a lot of people say this: they walk into a haunted place and they can smell cigarette smoke and stuff like that. Other perfumes as well, but the cigarette smoke, you know, it is possible it is the smell of an entity sort of thing. But, you know, I know when I have cigars, because I don't smoke really now. I do have cigars though.
Hmm.
I don't do drugs. Don't do drugs, kids. Well, when you're young, not when you're old. But I have cigars, and I'll know. I can still taste the cigar in my lungs, like 3 days later, 4 days later.
Yeah.
So, it is a smell that permeates. That's what I'm trying to say. So if there is wood and stuff in there, in these buildings, is it just a smell permeating and then you're just getting a waft of it? And I don't know how many years it could stay in there, but if it could stay in my lungs, which are moving all the time, for 4 days.
And you've got to remember,
everybody in there would have been smoking. There would have been 150 smoked. People in there with fags on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the days pipes when you could go into a British pub and you'd have to sort of
wasn't that
wave
long ago, was
in front
it?
Of your hand to actually to clear the smoke so you could see the bar. So
you have like a smoking room and a non-smoking room, but it didn't matter, did it?
No.
But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Guess what? The next one's a pub as well.
But I've got to stop at the Jamaica Inn once.
Yeah.
Because it does have lodgings now.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to stay there. The next one is also a pub, like I said. It's the St. Q Inn. The St. Q Inn is just a handful of buildings that make up the tiny village of St. Q. It's just one of the buildings. It was first licensed in the 18th century, although the building is much older and dates from the 1600s. It boasts a huge kitchen range and a slate floor, one section of which, now covered by concrete, presents visitors with a tantalizing enigma. In the 1970s, a new water pipe was being laid in the bar, and of course, due to excavations, workmen uncovered a skeleton of a teenage girl. According to forensic experts, rumour has it that she had been there for the best part of 100 years. Yet no one could discover her identity or find any reason for her decidedly unconventional resting place. She was reburied in consecrated grounds, and the spot where she had lain was converted into a concrete slab. However, her spirit has chosen to remain at the place of her original interment, and staff and regulars have come to know her as Adele, probably not singing hello. Given that it was building work that led to her re-emergence, it is perhaps fitting that she only appears when alterations are being carried out on the inn. On these occasions, people have known to feel a cold sensation as her invisible form brushes past them. Occasionally, witnesses have been treated to a full-fledged spectral apparition of the one lady known as Adele. As her somber shade glides silently by, her unblinking eyes fixed on some distant goal, she tends to evoke affection rather than fear, and is now more or less accepted as the inn's oldest resident. Well, is this what people say though, don't they? When they live with these entities, if they don't get a fear off them, they're just part of the woodwork,
aren't
they?
It's interesting that, you know, the feel that she gives off, you know, more of a joyous feel than a somber feel, because she seems... Can you imagine that though? She's just walking past you and she's like just transfixed on something in the distance, and
yeah,
she's just totally oblivious to you being there.
Yeah.
Weird,
isn't it?
Yeah. I'd love to see it though.
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
I think I would be puckering up a bit, but maybe more anyway. Don't know if I feel joyous, but I'd like to see it still.
So this one is a pub as well.
but it's got a very unconventional name. It's called The Bucket of Blood. It's in Philock. Yeah, a bit of a weird name.
Philock?
Philock, yeah. When it comes to pub names, cozier and more inviting names would probably seem the more sensible and appeal to more people.
Hmm.
Or bring footfall across the threshold, at least. Of course, you could adopt a different approach and give your pub name that might not come up on a daily basis, but it will certainly be unusual and unique and totally memorable.
Yeah.
As such, as the 18th century, such an approach has been adopted by this delightful 18th century pub. But why The Bucket of Blood? There are several theories and stories as how the pub came to its unusual name, and the most persistent of these is the oft-recited tale of how a former landlord of the pub went out to draw water from the pub's well. Having lowered his bucket into the well depths, he hauled up and to his horror found out it was filled with blood. A hasty investigation was carried out, and the cause of this phenomenon turned out to be a mutilated corpse of the local exercise officer that had been thrown into the well. The consensus was that he may have stumbled upon a local smuggling racket and had duly been silenced by the gang, after which his body was dumped into the chilly depths of the well to conceal the crime. It's a good story, and it's a favoured theory of local folklorists and storytellers. A more mundane explanation holds that the water from the well was tainted by deposits from the local tin mine and gave it a distinctive blood-like crimson. Probably more likely.
That's where my head went.
Yeah.
First of all, yeah, I was thinking like an iron or a tin.
So. That's probably more likely, isn't it?
Well,
the other one does make a good story.
Hmm.
It must be said, however, that any ghost is hampered in the chill factor stakes when pitted against such a macabre name. But this hasn't deterred a few residents' spooks from putting in occasional appearances. A phantom monk is said to lurk in some of the pub's darker recesses, and tables and chairs have been known to be rearranged and not being seen.
Mm.
You know, so this would happen overnight.
So poltergeist activity.
Yeah, much to the concentration of staff who just want to get the pub open and start pulling pints.
Concentration.
Consternation. Yeah, my reading's not great. Now, basically, they're pissed off because they want to open the pub and they've got to put all the furniture back. Whether these same unseen hands are responsible for administering the phantom shove in the back that some staff members have reported is unknown. And inevitably, the mangled spectre of the unknown victim whose long ago demise may have given rise to the pub's unusual name has also been known to put in occasional appearances close to the site where he suffered his fate. So there does seem to be a ghost hanging around the well. So, maybe.
Bucket of blood then.
Maybe. Bucket of blood, yeah. So, the next one. The Botathan ghost? Botathan?
Could be.
Yeah. I'm not great with pronunciations, and Cornwall's a weird place for...
It is. It's almost foreign, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. In March 2018, stories appeared in several Cornish newspapers that a certain house in the parish of St. Pethewin was being haunted by an apparition who had died under tragic circumstances in the 17th century. She had been making her presence known by causing lights to flicker and the kettle to suddenly switch on and come to boil of its own accord. There's also a story of how the 4-year-old daughter of a previous family who occupied the property would often wake in the night and then later tell her parents that the woman would put her back to bed. According to the reports, the ghost responsible for all of this was Dorothy Dingley, although her surname also
could be Durant, depends on what accounts you read. Although her story was well known in the early 19th century, it was thanks to a local clergyman, Robert Stephen Hawker, that her fame became more widespread when the tale of the Bothanan ghost appeared in Charles Dickens' publication All Year Round in May 1867. Her account of the hauntings has become the best known version and has since appeared in numerous supernatural Cornwall books. However, versions of the story have been appearing in several West Country newspapers throughout the 19th century, following the account appeared in the Exeter and Plymouth Gazette on Saturday the 8th, December 1827. We caution our readers, and particularly our Cornish friends, not to be alarmed at the headline of this article, for they will observe at the outset the occurrence took place above a century ago. In these later days, the reappearance of the defunct is generally disbelieved, and therefore it is perhaps that, except now and on this stage, no ghost ever attempts to frighten honest folks out of their seven senses. That sounds weird, but it is from a newspaper article. About 162 years since, a ghost is said to have made its appearance in a field above a mile, about a mile and a half from Botton, in the parish of St. Pethewin near Launceston. In the narrative which is given of the occurrence, it is said to have been seen by her son, Mr. Bly, who was about 16 years old, by his father and mother and Reverend John Ruddle, master of the grammar school of Launceston, who was also incumbent there. So basically, from that article, I've extracted that this apparition has been seen by people of stature. So, you know, a principal of a school, you know, that's someone who's, you know, it's not just your local town drunk that's seen this person or seen this apparition. And as to the reasons Dorothy's ghost has chosen to appear to the Bly family in particular, tradition holds that the elder brother had actually got her pregnant, and she died in childbirth, so that's why the descendants of this family tend to see her a little bit more than everybody else. Whether the truth behind her appearance or her story became popular in the 18th and 19th century, no compilation of Cornish ghost stories is full without this particular story. There is a lot more into this. You can read, like, there's loads and loads of information on this particular ghost, and you can read up. I think there's probably out there, you'll probably find podcasts dedicated to just this one ghost, because there's so many different apparitions of her.
Yeah, there's definitely tales of Cornish ghosts, loads of books.
Yeah,
I was looking at a book the other day, and we might have a guy on who wrote a book about Cornish ghosts, actually.
That's pretty cool.
Well, ghosts in general, but particularly Cornwall.
That's pretty cool. That'd be good to hear. The next place we're going to, guess what? It's not a pub.
No.
No, we're going to a jail. Bodmin Jail.
Oh, yeah.
Jails are another one that tends to be steeped in supernatural history. So, an aurora of distinct unease radiates from the crumbling walls and echoing corridors of Bodmin Gaol. from the moment you catch first glimpse of its sinister grey bulk looming over the town of Bodmin, a feeling of utter disillusion takes hold, its intensity increasing as the gloom-laden walls draw nearer. Once across the threshold, you find yourself pitched into a twilight where the world, vestiges of some gruesome past, still linger, and where the lost souls of long ago prisoners still wander in turmoil. Bodmin Jail was begun in the 1770s and was constructed by Napoleonic prisoners of war using 20,000 tons of granite quarried from Bodmin Moor. Chronic overcrowding led it to be extended several times in the 19th century before it was finally closed in 1927. Between 1785 and 1909, 55 people were executed at Bodmin Jail, but four of the hangings were carried out in public and provided a grisly source of entertainment for thousands of spectres who would congregate in adjoining fields to witness some poor wretch take his or her plunge into eternity. Amongst those executed at Bodmin Jail was Matthew Weeks, a crippled farmhand who was arrested for the murder of his lover, Charlotte Diamond, whose body was found on Rorter, one of Bodmin Moor's most striking landmarks. On Sunday, April the 14th, 1844, found guilty of his crime, was hanged at the Gaol in August 1844, and 20,000 people turned out to witness his final moments. Charlotte's ghost, clad in a gown and silk bonnet, is still said to appear at the site of her murder on the anniversary of her death. Whilst in recent years, considerable doubt has been cast to the veracity of Matthew's conviction. The terror and misery that condemned felons, such as Matthew Weeks, must have felt as they sat in the grim cells of Bodmin Jail awaiting death can only be guessed at. But vestiges of their trepidation appear to have permeated the very walls of the prison, and many visitors are overcome by feelings of disillusion and despondency as they explore the dank maze of dark corridors and claustrophobic cells. Another former prisoner whose spirit has remained earthbound at Bodmin Jail is Selina Wadge, who was arrested in 1878 for the murder of her youngest son Harry. She told a constable she had been urged to murder him by her lover, James Westwood, who had promised to marry her if her boys were out of the way. Westwood strenuously denied this, claiming that he had nothing against the boy. At her subsequent trial, the jury found Selina guilty, although they recommended leniency on the grounds that she had taken good care of her children and that, in their opinion, the murder had not been premeditated. But the judge, Mr. Justice Denman, disagreed and sentenced her to death. On Thursday, the 15th of August, 1878, a sobbing Selina was led from the condemned cell of Bodmin Jail, clutching a white handkerchief. Mounting the scaffold, she uttered her last words, "Lord, deliver me from this miserable world." And at precisely 8 a.m., the executioner pulled the lever on the trap and sent her plummeting to her death. Her body, still clutching the white handkerchief, was dangling for an hour before being cut down and buried within the prison grounds. Her ghost still wanders through the prison, where she tries to reach out to small children who often inquire about the crying lady in the long dress. Another phenomenon is that the pregnant women, who tend to become very emotional at Bodmin Jail, the third and fourth floors in particular, and this is where Selina supposedly projects her feeling of guilt and remorse onto them.
So, yeah, I mean, that's quite strange. I mean, jails generally, especially in this country, public executions.
Well, I think the one, obviously, the lad who's, yeah, there's some doubt now whether he was actually guilty or not. And I suppose that would cause, you could see how that would cause a ghost, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, by the sounds of it, she seems to have regretted what she'd done.
Yeah.
But I think the judge was right. She needs hanging for that.
Yeah, totally. I love how the jury goes, well, yeah, well, she was a good mum. Yeah,
she was good up to that
She was
point,
good
yeah.
up to the yeah. point she murdered her children.
But, yeah. Yeah, that don't forgive that, does it?
No, not.
So that makes sense. But yeah, like, she's probably regretted it now as a ghost. She's going around, yeah. you know, trying to make it up to children or whatever. But
too little, too late, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a strange one. I mean, public executions and hangings and things like that. I mean, Tyburn in London is one of the, you know, that there's so much activity at Tyburn. For those of you who don't know, that's basically the public execution place for London, or was the public execution place for London. But yeah, so I'm not surprised that jails tend to have quite a high concentration, especially ones like that, like disused 17th century jails. You know, I wouldn't be not surprised at all.
Yeah, just for those who want to know, you can look into the Jamaica Inn a little bit more detail if you like.
Have you found it?
No, they do have a website.
Do they?
Yeah. Cool. I could probably put some of these things in the description if people want to click on it. We have got a few more Tales from Cornwall to come for Patreon.
Yeah, there's loads.
And Apple, the Not-So-Secret Secret Club. So if you are a member of the Not-So-Secret Secret Club, then... You'll be getting
quite a bit extra. Yeah, it's almost another episode.
Some of them we've got extra. You know, we could do like half an hour, or whatever. And then we get extra stuff to put on. And other ones we don't find enough.
Yeah, so and it just makes a half an hour show.
Yeah, yeah. So when
we do find
enough, obviously you get the extra portion. Plus, you don't get the adverts and all that. And you know, if we're gonna pay for editors and that, then obviously we need the adverts, or we need. So we have to have the adverts, but
it buys us a beer at the end of the week.
Yeah,
so.
If you can afford to do it, then obviously get you sent on Patreon. You'll get more shows and you get the ad free and all the rest of it. Same with Apple Podcasts. So join the Not So Secret Club. We'll have to get you a T-shirt that says that.
Yeah,
you know, people that are on there have to get them a T-shirt that says that. But yeah, so. Yeah.
Join us. Thank you very much.
Join us. Help us out. And yeah, we appreciate it. So thank you very much.
We'll see you
on the other side.
Well, they've gone. No, just for now. It wasn't the right time for us to meet. But there'll be other nights, other stars for us to watch. They'll be back.